Blog Talk Radio.
Radio show, and today my special guest is Stephen Baldassare, and Steve's from the US, and he's got a few things to tell us today about what's going on over in Oregon. So why don't you introduce yourself first, because I don't know much about you, Steve, and then we'll find out what's happening.
Sure, Michael, I just want to say thanks for having me on the show. My name is Steve Baldassare. I'm just your average person, you know. I'm nothing special, no one special, but I just care about freedom and about protecting the innocent and just making sure that governments are kept in check, because, you know, they're acting too tyrannical these days, and I think that we the people have to take a stand against the tyranny. We have to stop it, and we have to call out the problems that we're seeing and not be scared to speak out against anyone who is trying to bring down tyranny upon us.
Yeah, and actually I'm seeing this happening all over the world now in the civilized countries. People are starting to wake up that the two-party system that we've been under the yoke of is not working. And it's just as bad for America as it is in Canada and UK and Australia, and even in India, although India is a little bit different, of course, but they're starting to wake up to the Muslim problem. And down here in Australia, we're very lucky. We've got a lot of good patriots who are standing up. And I've been talking about citizens-initiated referendums, bringing those in for the last 5 years. And now the message is starting to spread. And people all over Australia are starting to say, well, yeah, we've got an election coming up. Why don't we elect somebody who's going to do that for us? So I've decided to run for the Senate because nobody else would do it. And
right.
Let's face it, you know, I think I'm qualified. I've been doing this for a long time, and I know a lot about the Constitution and how it works. I know a lot about our political situation and how that's not working. So, yeah, that's me, and I'm glad to see that you're on side too. Have you been up to Oregon, or do you know what's going on up there?
I have not been to Oregon myself, but I have been in communication with Ammon Bundy, for example, who is leading the movement. He's coupled up with John Ritzheimer, also Blaine Cooper, and a couple others, including Lavoie Finicum. I'm not honestly someone who knows them directly. I've become friends with them through the Facebook, you know, social media movement of patriots, not just in the United States of America, but throughout the world. And I actually am the administrator for a page called No More Abominations on Facebook.
And, yeah, I saw that.
Great. Yeah, no, I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, the reason I started this, and it's interesting because, you know, as recently as maybe 8 to 10 years ago, I wasn't even paying attention to politics. And, you know, you just start to pay attention, and what you find out is scary. And you realize, wow, this is, you know, it's not something that's a movie. This is real life. It's something that we have to take responsibility for as people who are trying to protect our rights, and, you know, it's only up to us. If we don't make a stand, then we're all in big trouble because, you know, like you were speaking to earlier, we have a big Muslim problem on top of the tyranny of our own governments, and that's those couple of things right there, in my opinion, are two of the biggest threats to not just a national security of a country, but international security, and we're starting to see the repercussions of all of that.
Well, actually, I believe, and I've seen, that we actually have three main enemies. We have the socialist left, the communists and the socialists. We have the right-wing Nazis and all those mob. And we have Islam. So we're being assailed on all sides. But the thing is, as far as I keep telling people, we are right because we're defending freedom. We're defending truth and justice. Those people are not. They're trying to destroy it. So in the end, we will prevail. But let's go on to the Bundys and what's happening up in Oregon, because I've been following it down here, and I've watched some videos. I've actually watched the live feed from them, and I've reported on my page a couple of times. But can you give listeners a background to what you've seen over there?
Yeah, I mean, essentially what's going on, and to try to put it in the simplest of terms from what I know and what we've all found out, is that, you know, starting in about 1870, there was a, you know, basically private land that was owned by a bunch of ranchers. And over time, what happened is the federal government moved in multiple different ways to take over that land and to take away their grazing rights, to take away the mines, the mining ability that was, you know, everyone was mining the land. And all of a sudden, the federal government moves in, puts claim to the land. And they've done that multiple times. And, you know, this is basically now it's reaching ahead here. And people are being pushed out of their homelands. They're not being able to farm their land the way they have for a long time, and they don't like how the federal government just puts claim to land. And the fact of the matter is that they have a constitutional right to take a stand. So, you know, a lot of liberals on the left are saying things here in America like that, you know, anyone who supports this is lawless. I have people attacking not only my blog, No More Abominations, as I'm sure most blogs get, but, you know, they seem misguided. And it's interesting to see that when people are taking a stand, not only for their own rights against this federal tyranny, but it's more of a bigger problem than just the Hammonds or just the Bundys. It's about the federal control of the people. And that control is a dangerous thing, because the more that control exists, the more people are at risk of having their freedoms taken away. And that's exactly what we're starting to see happen.
Oh, yes. And we face exactly the same problem down here. The government is selling off vast swaths of Australian land, farming land, to overseas interests, including the Chinese. We've had our guns taken away because we don't have is it the Second Amendment?
Yes, we have a Second Amendment, and that's all tied in with the Hammond and the Bundy incident there in Oregon, in Burns, Oregon. Because, you see, we use our Second Amendment to protect our First and every other, because not because we're cowboys from America. You know, I know that a lot of times people get that idea of Americans, because, you know, that's just, in some cases it's been true, some cases not. But, you know, I think that we're just patriots who know we have a right to bear arms that is an inalienable right given to us by God. And a lot of people don't realize that Second Amendment actually just protects our already existing God-given right to defend ourselves.
Exactly. And, you know,
there's a big movement in the world today to take away all of our guns. And when you have political elitists that are trying to get control of the people, they're sieging our land unconstitutionally, because the federal government does not have claim to any of that land. According to our Constitution, the only land they can put claim to is the 10-mile radius around Washington, D.C. And so they're overstepping their boundaries, and they will continue to. And you know, you give somebody an inch and they'll take a mile. And imagine that multiplied, because you have a federal government that's involved that is power-hungry. And it's not just the United States' government. It's across the whole world.
Yeah.
And I think that we the people, as you're saying, and you've said on other shows that you've had, we need to start taking that stand now, because it's now or never. They're opening up our borders while simultaneously disarming the people of their countries. And they're implementing an invasion, a worldwide Muslim invasion of our nations. And, you know, people say things like, if you say anything against Islam, that you're racist. And I say to those people this, I say, you need to open up a dictionary or look up the word that you're using, because racism implies that you're against a certain ethnic, you know, person, a certain ethnicity. And Islam is not a race. Islam is an ideology. It's a political movement. It's a cult of people that follow crazy ideologies. And it's really something that's very dangerous. And we need to start understanding that and speaking to it.
Yeah, well, I went to high school in Penang in Malaya, was just after it became Malaysia, actually, back in 60. I lived there for 3 years. I speak a little bit of Malay. I've seen what how the Malays live there, and I've traveled throughout Indonesia. I've seen the atrocities in southern Thailand. I've lived in Thailand for 30 years. I know Muslims up there. I know Muslims down here. And the more I see, the less I like and the less I'll ever trust them. And none of us can trust them, because in the Quran it says you can never be friends with an infidel, and you can lie and cheat and steal from them, but you can never be a friend of them. And that's the problem we face. So this creates a very difficult situation, but one we should talk about perhaps in the future. But I'd like to get back to Oregon. Can you give us a breakdown of the events that have happened up there? What started it, and what's going on now?
Yeah, sure. You know, to give a quick background of it all, basically the Harney Basin, where the Hammond Ranch is established, was settled in the 1870s, and the valley was settled by multiple ranchers and was known to have, you know, run over 300,000 head of cattle. So these ranchers developed a state-of-the-art irrigated system to water the meadows, and it soon became a favorite stopping place for, you know, for birds and animals and such. And in 1908, though, you know, President Theodore Roosevelt came in what a lot of people in the area said was a political scheme, and they created an Indian reservation area around Malheur, Mud and Harney Lakes there, and declared it as a, you know, a preserve and breeding ground for native birds. And, you know, later that Indian reservation became the Malheur National Wildlife Refugee Center there. And that was all the start of it. And that's why I wanted to give that background to the listeners here, because it's important that you know the story from the beginning, because without all the details, it makes it difficult to really get the truth.
Well, don't forget, too, that area is rich in minerals and other riches. Do you know much about that?
I'm a little less familiar with that part, to be honest, but I have heard that, and that's all connected, because it's seizing the land, seizing the minerals, seizing the ability for people to live and to live freely and to not be controlled by a tyrannical government. You know, and in Oregon, those people are being pushed off their land because they refused to sell. The government wasn't happy about it. They started taking away their grazing rights, and they had started a fire, and it was getting a little out of control, so they put the fire out by backburning it. And then basically they did, you know, like one of your previous callers had said, they were kind of doing the federal government a favor there. And, you know, essentially the government comes in and labels it federal land and wants to throw them in jail and tries to label them criminals. And, you know, the thing is, this is the same federal government that refuses to even identify Muslim terrorism as terror.
Yeah.
And even though we're fighting a war on terror, and the name of the biggest organization we're fighting is the Islamic State, you know, so it's just really all connected. I try to tell people, you know, connect the dots. Don't just look at the surface of things. Look deeper into them.
Yes, I agree. Let's have a break now, Steve. I'm going to play a song. In Excess, a great Aussie band, recorded this song, Guns in the Sky.
Take your hand.
Each week, we read a verse from the Quran. There are at least 109 verses that command all Muslims to war with non-believers, that's us, infidels, to help spread Islamic rule to the whole planet. That is what the ideology of Islam commands, and therefore it is extremely dangerous, more dangerous than Nazism. Unlike nearly all of the Old Testament verses of violence, the verses of violence in the Quran are mostly open-ended, which means that they are not restrained by the historical context of the surrounding text. They are part of the eternal, unchanging word of Allah, and therefore just as dangerous today as they were when Muhammad rampaged across the world. Unfortunately, there are very few verses of tolerance and peace to abrogate or even balance out the many that call for non-believers to be fought and subjugated until they either accept humiliation, convert to Islam, or are killed. Muhammad's own martial legacy, along with the remarkable stress on violence found in the Quran, have produced a trail of blood and tears across history. It's estimated that more than 300 million people have died as a result of Islamic terror. 80 million Hindus have been killed, perhaps many more. 60 million Christians, starting back in the Crusades. 220,000 Jews were killed in just 1 year in 1146 in Morocco. Add another 17 million slaves shipped to Islamic countries, mainly from the Barbary pirates, but also from other areas as well. And today it still goes on. 11 million Muslims have been killed at the hands of Muslims themselves since 1948. 3 million Bangladeshis were wiped out at the hands of Muslims. 1.5 million Algerians were massacred by Islamists. 1.5 million Armenians were massacred by Turkish Muslims. 750,000 Assyrians were killed during the Ottoman period. 500,000 to 1.5 million were killed in the Iran-Iraq war by Muslims. 1 million Greeks have been killed and at least 3 million displaced. 300,000 Ugandans were killed in the 8-year rule of Idi Amin, a crazed Islamic. 400,000 Darfurians, according to the United Nations Human Rights Council. 70,000 Kurds have been killed, 20,000 Assyrians, 10,000 have been killed in Iran in 1988 alone for dissidents against Islam. In 2010, 9,213 people were killed by the hands of Islamists and 16,987 were injured. In 2011, 9,068 people were killed at the hands of Islamists and 16,900 were injured. And totaling since September 2001 to September 2012, we have had approximately 19,600 terror attacks. That is now around 26,000 in 2016. The murder, the bloodshed, the killing continues wherever Islam goes. And this is why we must never give in to Islam. Today, I want to read out Verse 9, paragraph 14. It reads, "Fight against them so that Allah will punish them by your hands and disgrace them and give you victory over them and heal the breasts of a believing people." Now, humiliation and hurting non-believers not only has the blessing of Allah, but it is ordered as a means of carrying out his punishment and even healing the hearts of Muslims. This is why Islam is so dangerous, because a lot of Muslims believe implicitly every single word in the Quran, and they believe also that they must carry out the commands in the Quran, and therefore we are all in grave danger. The fact that not all Muslims are going out and doing this now does not mean that they will not do it sometime in the future. In fact, it has been shown many times throughout history that Muslims will bide their time until they believe the time is right to strike and spread Islam. Beware. Islam is a mental disease and dangerous to the whole world. This is the Restore Australia radio show with your host, Mike Holt. Before we get back to our guest, Steve Baldessari, I'd like to play a song by ELO, Calling America. Australia Radio Show with your host Mike Holt, and my guest today is Steve Baldessari. Whereabouts are you in the States, Steve?
I currently live in Boston, Massachusetts, one of the suburbs, another city right next to it actually. It's called Quincy, Massachusetts.
Oh yeah, I know. I've got a good friend over there. Steve, we were talking just before about the chain of events that happened up in Oregon to get started. So it all started over this business of backburning, but really the federal government has tried to grab the land. Now, I also asked you about the minerals up there, and I believe that because it was a volcanic area, there are diamonds, there's oil, there's other valuable stones and minerals there. So this is also part of why the government is trying to grab hold of it, because the Bundys and the other ranchers up there have been mining that area for generations. And you know, now suddenly the federal government has said, hello, we could be making money out of this. But as we see, our governments don't know how to handle our money. And so they will make a grab for money any way they can so that they can perpetuate their grip on us. And it's time that we the people stand up against this and put a stop to it and start electing true representatives of the people. So,
amen.
Do you know what's going on up there now? I believe that quite a few patriots have gone up there, armed and ready to defend the ranch areas. And that is that true?
That is true. You know, from the reports I've been reading about, and from what I've heard from the people that are there, there's about 300. I don't think they want to really say that it's that few or that many. I think that a lot of people are starting to come in, and you know, the thing that you find amongst any movement really is there's always dissension in the ranks in this sense, you know, meaning that even if people believe in the same concepts and the same principles, they don't always agree on how to get things done.
Yep.
And some people know more than others too. So some people would think that they are being lawless because they might not know the constitutional facts that they need to come to a proper conclusion about what's going on there.
Mm. And, well, we see this with the patriot groups down here too. There's always divisions, but we're all starting to work together now because we all have a common purpose, and we need to get over the divisions amongst us and recognize that we all are working together and in unison. We may not have the same methods, but we need to recognize that we are working for a common good. And I think it's probably the same thing up there.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, Mike. And you know, the thing about that is that we have a government, at least in the United States, I can speak for our country here, we have a government that has been trying to divide the people.
Yes.
You know, Barack Hussein Obama, when he came into power, he said that he was going to fundamentally change the United States of America. Mm-hmm. So he was telling us what he was planning to do. And to that, I would say this. This has been a beacon of freedom to the world for many years, and a lot of people would say it's been many other things too. But the good people of this country, that's what we want to be.
Yes.
We want to be a beacon to the world that represents freedom. And that's why we have our soldiers go like Australia soldiers do, you know, and we're allies all the time going into war zones. And, you know, we're going and we're risking our countrymen's lives for people we don't even know who hate us.
Yeah. And it's ridiculous, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And it boggles the mind because you think, if the same instance with Oregon, though, you know, the people are standing up for their rights, they're willing to risk their life to, you know, make sure freedom doesn't go away and that we all have it.
Yep.
And then we have people in our government who are trading traitors from our country, Bergdahl, for four-star general terrorists. And where I come from, and according to our Constitution, that's considered treason.
Yep.
And now I know that sounds like a conspiracy theory or some overreach, but the fact of the matter is it isn't at all.
No.
It's aiding and abetting terrorists. And, you know, a few of those terrorists that he released in that swap, even, for example, are now back fighting for the enemy.
I know.
And that puts not just the United States' people in jeopardy, it puts the whole world's people, the innocent people of the world, in jeopardy. And we can't tolerate that, and the world shouldn't tolerate that, whether it's coming from the U.S. or Australia or anywhere else.
Yes, it's ridiculous, isn't it? And I couldn't believe it when they started releasing those prisoners from Guantanamo. Those people were out-and-out terrorists and dedicated to the destruction of the West. Why would you let them go?
I know. It's only for one reason. And when you look at the history of Barack Obama and where he comes from, which is why he tries to hide that so much, he has very deep communist, socialist, and Muslim roots. I mean, he grew up with communist professors teaching him. They were close to his stepfather, who was a big Muslim. And, you know, he grew up abroad, and he won't release a real birth certificate, despite the fact that many people have shown that it's not real and it's not authentic. And, you know, it's just it's a case of a president gone rogue who has one goal in mind, and that's the destruction of the United States of America. That's what a lot of us feel. Mm. We honestly, deeply, and truly feel that all of his policies, his opening up of the border, his disarming the people, his attempt to make free speech zones, his just total rejection of the will of the people, it's because of his roots, it's because of his agenda being more important than the people, and we the people have to stop that dictatorship that is the Obama administration.
Yes. To be honest with you, I can't even understand why he's still in power. He should have been impeached, charged. You know, I mean, first of all, you impeach him, and then you charge him with treason, because he has betrayed America, America's principles, and America's Constitution. He is a criminal.
He is. And, you know, the things I mentioned are just a couple of the things. And it's just a shame that people don't know what he's done. It's a shame that they refuse to accept what he's done, and that they like to say that you're a racist if you speak out against Barack Obama. And you know what I say to those people? They need to study history, because you see, the Republican Party here in America, they liberated the slaves. The KKK was formed by the Democrats originally to target white conservatives, and then it moved on to the black community, and we all know what happened from there, that horrible, you know, atrocity against the black community, and not just black minorities. So, but, you know, the thing is, a lot of people don't realize that some of the first slave owners in the United States were black people, and that, you know, we've been only around for, what, you know, under 300 years, whatever it's been now. And the fact of the matter is that the whole world has had this problem of slavery, and even Africa is where it all started. So it's they enslaved themselves. Slavery is wrong, but, you know, the slavery of the people is wrong too, and we need to stop what's going on in government to make sure that we all don't become slaves to this tyranny.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we have here in Australia allowed our government to enslave us, whether we like it or not. We've dropped the ball, as I keep telling people. And we're working hard now, because I'm running for the Senate, to try and educate people to make their vote count. Politics is not a football game. You don't choose your team and just vote for them because they're the team that you follow. This is a very serious business.
That's right.
And if we don't start taking it seriously, we will reap what we sow. It's time to wake up and stop being silly. But what do you think will be the outcome of things up in Oregon now?
Well, what I think has to happen is this. And it's like you said, we the people have to come together. And people are coming together. There's a lot of different blogs, a lot of different pages, and they're all kind of just out there. I think everyone's trying to do everything on their own.
Yeah.
And I think that what the whole movement lacks is leadership.
Yes.
And I think that we have a lot of leaders in the movement, but a lot of people, for many different reasons, aren't stepping up. And what we need is people to step up.
And well, I face the same dilemma, you know. I mean, I've been doing this for 5 years, and I know that we need good leaders, but I kept hoping that somebody else would do it. And in the end, I realized I have to do it. I have to step forward. I may not be an ideal leader, but at least I'm going to give it a go.
Leaders come in all shapes and sizes, you know, and that's the thing is, like you were saying before, different people bring different things to the table. So, you know, your calling might not be the same as someone else's, but that doesn't mean that your calling isn't as important as the other person's, because everyone has a part to play. And as long as everybody does a little, that amounts to a whole lot.
Yes.
You have a few people doing a lot, it doesn't amount to as much as it could.
No, actually, I've often called our movement the raindrop movement, because one raindrop on its own is not very powerful, but when you have a lot of raindrops all falling together, you have a deluge, and that can be a very powerful tool. Steve, I'm going to stop now again for another song, and actually, I'm going to play Mighty Mo. I don't know if you've heard him.
I have.
Oh, jolly good. Well, this is the next episode, and I'll be recording new episodes of Mighty Mo very soon. So let's go and have a listen to Mighty Mo. Back soon.
Mighty Mo!
It's weeks later from the last time we listened in to Mighty Mo, and things in Bendover have gone from bad to worse. The citizens of Bendover are causing many more problems than Mighty Mo ever anticipated.
Oh, Waisha, what am I going to do? Why ask me, oh Mighty Mo? I don't even know why they call you Mighty. unless it's to explain the mighty lack between your big toes. Besides, what would a 7-year-old girl like me know? Silence, girl. That was a rhetorical question. Ooh, I love it when you use big words. It gives me camel bumps all over. Get out, you silly girl, and send in fizzy muggles. I need someone with half an ounce of brain to talk to. Oh, I leave your presence with pleasure. Mighty Mo. For once, you are right, oh great one. Fizzy does have half an ounce of brain. I know. I peeked in his ear one day, and I could see out the other side. That camel urine is stale. Nothing is fresh and bright like it used to be. Even Aisha treats me worse than an old married woman. Oh, woe is me. What has happened to my well-laid plans? I shall never conquer the world at this rate. Even my followers jeer me for worshipping a black rock when I tell them it is Allah inside. Oh, who is there?
Oh, it's me, O mendacious gracious one. Fizzy Muggles.
Well, come in. Don't dilly-dally like the wimp you are.
Oh, wise and wonderful one. Why have you summoned me to your simple abode?
Ah, Fizzy. Find a space on the carpet and sit with me a while.
At last, a space to sit. Oh, great and one...
Shut up and stop the superlatives. I am in no mood for your faulty fawning today. Here, have a glass of camel urine.
Oh, mighty Mo, that was so tasty. I abase myself at your feet with the pleasure of having shared your camel urine. Maybe not. When was the last time you washed your feet, O mighty Mo?
Boy, never mind that now, Fizzy. I need your advice.
Anything I can do, Mo?
Careful, Fizzy. Don't get too familiar with me. Sharing my urine does not bestow any freedom on you to forget your manners.
Oh, my abject apologies, O mighty Mo. I shall call you whatever you wish. What a pity I can't call him what I really think of him, O dear listener. Oh, goodness gracious.
Mighty Mo will do nicely. Now, why hasn't my mosque been built yet, Fizzy? The foundations have not even been laid yet. Oh, woe is me. The mosque is rapidly becoming a symbol of my relationship with Aisha. I want to lay it, but it's not possible. Why me?
Oh, mighty Mo. My abject apologies. I have tried to build your mosque. I have recruited hundreds of Afghans ready to work, but they merely sit idle. Every time I go to build, something terrible happens.
You had better have a good reason, Fizzy.
Oh, I do, Almighty Mo. You remember the first piece of land we were going to build on?
Yes, I do. Those terrible infidels buried pig carcasses all over the land and we couldn't go near it.
Exactly, my mendacious one. Every time I visit a piece of land with a view to buying it, why, the very next day, the Bendover newspaper reports yet another pig internment.
How can I go near such soiled ground? I hate pigs!
It is indeed a worrying problem, Fizzy. I shall have to look hard into this problem.
Now pass me the hookah and fill it with the best Lebanese blonde. I might as well cogitate and pleasure myself at the same time.
Yes, indeed, listeners, things look bleak indeed for Mighty Mo. Those pesky infidels just won't bow down to his demands. But will they run out of pigs before he gives up? Will his camel start urinating sweet, fresh liquid? Can the Lebanese blonde do her work and calm his troubled soul? Tune in next time to hear more adventures of
Mighty Mo!
Well, that was a bit of fun, wasn't it? Mighty Mo sure does get up to some shenanigans.
Yeah.
This is Mike Holt, your host on the Restore Australia radio show, and our guest today is Steve Baldessari. And, Steve, we've been talking about the situation up in Oregon, and, of course, they're having a few internal divisions amongst the Patriots, but this all comes back to leadership, and we were discussing this just before Mighty Mo, so let's continue on. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think that what we need to do is we need to organize, and organization is one of the skills that a leader would have. And we need to find the people who have the skills that we need so that our movement can be a success. And I think we have to stop hiding in the shadows so much and being so fearful to just speak out and to get the word out, because the more people speak up, the more other people will be motivated to speak up too, and they won't be so hesitant. And people will look to you when you speak up as a leader just for doing that alone, because they have been beaten into submission either literally or, you know, in other way, in many ways they have,
Yeah. Politically.
And so we're in the United States here, and we're trying to do just that. Right now I'm organizing something called the Citizens for Constitutional Freedom Support Rally, and that's to support the Bundys and the Hammonds and everyone who's standing there in Oregon with them, to support freedom, to stand against the federal land grab, to stand against federal tyranny in general, and to say enough is enough. And so since I have had the good fortune to have some connections out there in Oregon with the actual people that are doing this and standing for our country and our freedoms, I reached out to them and I said that I want to support them, because I wasn't able to, unfortunately, let down my job and just go out there. And, you know, a lot of people feel the same way or in the same position as I was, and they're not able to just leave a job. They won't be able to put bread in their tables for their families, but they want to be involved and they want to feel like they're important.
Mm.
And I think a good leader inspires people.
Right.
And it's not about the leader themselves. It's about the people that they're leading.
Mm.
And that's what it's all about. It was we the people. So we're organizing this event to be across 50 states, all 50 states. And it's a new idea, and it's actually blossomed. I've been very surprised with the attention it's getting. With a lot of movements, like anything, I think hard work has to be put into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you might have failures at the beginning, but failure leads to success. And those who are willing to be diligent and to show that fortitude, those are the people who are difference makers. Those are the people who are world changers.
Mm.
And so we plan on doing just that. We're going to organize this event. We're calling them directors of events for each state to coordinate the rallies at the Capitol buildings of each state. And they're going to have all the citizens go there who want to participate in the rally to have, you know, their American flags and wave the flag in support of freedom.
Hmm.
And to have our signs up to say that we support the Hammonds and the Bundys in Oregon, and that we don't support the federal tyranny that we're seeing from our government.
Fantastic.
And so
well,
that
now,
is our plan.
Good. Now, here's an idea, because down here in Australia and in the UK, and I believe in some parts of Europe, people are doing exactly the same thing. And we're organizing a worldwide rally on February the 6th. Why not coordinate with us and let's do it like that?
That sounds like a great idea to me. I would love to. I mean, right now our event's scheduled for January 23rd from 1 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But we just came up with this idea very recently, and the amount of attention it's getting from from the haters from the opposite side who don't understand what's going on and the stand that these people are taking, and from the patriots who do understand it, is phenomenal. And I think that there's a lot of people who are anxious to get involved. And so if we could make this an international event of unity against tyranny, against forced invasions, against whatever kind of tyranny we're seeing, whether it's the Muslim invasions that they're orchestrating and refusing to admit that Islam is a threat to all of society everywhere, you know, or whether it's just the tyranny from our government, and the list goes on. Mm. If we can stand together, that will make a big difference, because then our leaders won't be able to deny it anymore. They won't be able to, you know, brush it under the rug and say that it's not real, or that you're just a right-wing nut job, or a, you know, a confused person in general.
Mate, you're going to have to do better with your insults, because I've been called a lot worse than that.
Well, yeah, we get a lot of insults. I tried to keep it clean, but
All right. I was counting today. I have 5 hate pages against me by so-called patriots. This is amazing.
It's popular. That means you're doing something right then, right?
Well, it must be, yeah. And that's not counting the socialist hate pages and the Nazi hate pages against me. So,
they call you a Nazi?
Sorry?
They call you things like a Nazi?
No. We've got Nazis in here in Australia, the Australia First Party. And these people are down out, you know, real homegrown Nazis. And I actually had a go at them, and of course they didn't like me exposing them, so they've set up pages to attack me. The socialists have done it, and have been for a while, and this small group of so-called patriots have been attacking me as well. But, you know, it's all water off a duck's back. They can attack me all they like. The fact is, what I'm doing is right. It's for the good of the country, and I'm not here to worry about what people say. I'm here to do what needs to be done. And it's time that we had a lot more people, and this, of course, comes back to leadership. You know, I stood for election 3 years ago in the federal elections in my local electorate. And it was a lot of hard work. I lost badly because it was my first foray into politics, and I chose a party to stand for that didn't have any money and had a lot of baggage to go with it. And a lot of people loved the party and a lot of people hated it. So I lost very badly, and I swore at the time, I'm never going to do that again. But then recently we've had 2 coups. We had the coup where Julia Gillard deposed Kevin Rudd, both Labor prime ministers. And then recently we elected a right-wing party, the Liberal National Party, and we thought, oh, good, you know, the Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, was doing a great job keeping the Muslims out and stopping the boats, etc. And this little turd Turnbull came along and deposed Tony Abbott, and he is on the right-hand side. Well, he was supposed to be on the right-hand side, but we say he's actually a left-wing socialist in disguise, sent to destabilize the country. And this is the problem we face. These parties that are supposed to be defending our democracy and defending our nation are actually betraying us. So,
absolutely. I agree with you more. And we're seeing the same thing here in the United States, too. And, you know, I think traditionally people are used to the Republicans being the conservatives and the Democrats being just liberal. Mm. But now what's happened is the Democrats of the left have gone further to the left and become socialist, communist, and pro-Islam.
Yeah.
And you see, the people in the right wing, as they call it here in the United States, you know, the conservatives, we're now being misrepresented by people who are what they call rhinos. So that means Republicans in name only.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's a good one.
we don't support them because they don't represent us. We even want them in our party, because that's why the Tea Party started here in the United States, because the Republican Party, the establishment, has just slipped away from the conservative values that it used to represent. Mm. And now it's even making it seem like us conservatives who are the Tea Party, who used to be the Republican Party, that we're extreme to the right. But if extremism, as they call it, is now, you know, patriotism, if that's one and the same, and then they're coupling that up with terrorism, we have a big problem there. You see, they're blurring the lines on purpose.
That's right.
They want you to be confused and to not know what's what.
Yeah.
That way they can control you. It's easier that way.
Yes, and that's why I keep reminding people that we are, what we are doing is right. It's good for the country. It's good for the people. And therefore, there can be no ambiguity here. If we're doing the right thing, then that's all there is to it. And these people can throw all the nasty names they like at us, but at the end of the day, we are right, and they are wrong. It's that simple. And it's the same thing with Islam.
It is. And you know, that's why the challenge is to get through to the thick-headed people who just refuse to see things for what they are and refuse to accept right as being right and wrong as wrong.
Yeah.
You know, they try to even blur the line there, and they'll say things to you such as, well, what is right? And, you know, the fact is the world knew what right from wrong was for centuries, and all of a sudden it seems like this century – they're doing what I said before, blurring the lines, and they want to have us be a society where anything goes, an immoral society, and the demoralization of our society is what has led to all of this, because now good people are scared to stand up, and people aren't taught the right values in their families, and their families aren't even existing anymore because they're all so many broken homes.
Yeah.
And I really feel that the best way that we can make a difference in this world, across this world, is to bring back the morality into the families. And if we take it to that level and we realize that as a, you know, a global society, then we can really make a difference there. And we can prevent the indoctrination of our children from these corrupt politicians who have an agenda, and they'll stop at nothing until it's successful.
Well, this all comes back to Agenda 21 and the attempt by the socialist communists to destroy the fabric of our nation so that they can impose socialism on us. And it's happening. And they've been getting away with it for a long time because, as you said, people were being lied to. We've had the wool pulled over our eyes, but not anymore. We've woken up, and a lot of us now are aware. But you said something before which really resonated about getting over their fear. And this is something that I see also in some of the patriot groups here. I've seen it in a couple of other groups, and they are afraid to act and come out into the open. One group up here I saw in particular, when they started up, they just wanted to hide in the shadows and not become known. They didn't want to have anything to do with me because they felt that I was too well known and too controversial. And I just said, oh, okay, up to you. You know, you want to do like that? Do you want to stop our friendship and stop coordinating with us? Fine, go ahead. But they soon found out that they had to come out of the woodwork because otherwise they just could not act effectively. People are not going to follow somebody who hides in the shadows. It's that simple.
That's right. I think a lot of the reason, some of it's fear, like I was speaking to and like you were just speaking to there. But some of it's protection. It's about self-defense, too. And
yeah.
I think that, you know, we have to make sure that we just stay the course and that we don't lose sight of what's important here.
Exactly. That's it. You just have to stay strong. And, you know, I mean, I'm just human. And sometimes all of this work that I'm doing here, I mean, my wife complains to me all the time, you're not making any money out of this. Why do you waste so much time on the computer? And I just tell her, look, this is my country I'm fighting for. And she gets it sometimes, and sometimes she doesn't, you know. She's a woman. She wants security. She wants, you know, she wants me to be looking after her more. And I do try, but at the same time, if I neglect my country, we won't have anything to protect anymore.
So, and that's exactly right, and that's a very proper way of thinking about things. It's a logical way, because I think that common sense isn't so common anymore, and it's not a dig by any means to your wife. It's not a dig to anybody. It's a dig to everybody, that we need to fix these things. We need to get with the program. We need to understand that when people like ourselves dedicate our lives and risk our reputation and take ourselves away from our families and make our friends and our families hate us, we're not doing it because we like to be hated. We're not doing it because we like to be confrontational. We're doing it out of necessity, because if we don't do it, like you said, there's not going to be anything left to protect. There's not going to be any honey to come home to.
Exactly.
And, the sooner that we realize that, the better off we'll be.
Yeah. Well, you know, I try my best to make time for my family, and I do what I can. But at the end of the day, the battle is here, and I have to, as they used to say in the old days, gird my loins and go out to battle. That's it. It's that simple. I joined the Air Force, the RAAF, back when I was 17, because my country went to war, and they were going to send me, they were going to draft me into the army, and I did. My father was in the Air Force, so I didn't really want to be in the army, so I joined up. And I'm glad I did, because it was probably the best thing I ever did. But the fact is, I've served my country before, and I thought, well, that should be enough, but it's not. I have to serve my country again. And I will do that to my dying breath.
And that's the thing is, you know, I come from a family here in the United States, a military family. My father was in Vietnam. My grandfather was in the Navy. My uncles were in Vietnam. And I personally never actually enrolled. And part of the reason why is because when I started paying attention to politics, and you know, we generalize everything into one category and we call it politics, but when I started paying attention, I realized who was in power and who is the commander-in-chief that would be giving us orders. And you see that all of our troops here in the United States are being thrown into harm's way because of, basically a president who cares more about his political agenda and trying to look good in front of the world than about our people.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people are mad at him, and they believe ISIS rose to power, at least in some regard, because of the fact that he pulled our troops out prematurely. You know, a lot of people didn't like that our troops were in certain areas. And I think that whether you like whether we were there or not, us being there makes a difference militarily.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remove that opposition to the terrorists, then the terrorists rise. And that's exactly what happened. And that's why George W. Bush here in the United States warned when he was leaving office that if Obama or anyone else were to do that, then they were going to see what we have today.
Yeah. Well, this is it. And I saw this during the Vietnam War, too. You know, the American leadership in those days didn't go into that war with the intention of winning. And we are at war with an implacable enemy. I mean, these people will stop at nothing to spread their brand of evil. And there's only one way to meet evil, and that is with overwhelming force. We cannot afford to pussyfoot around. We have to fight them with tooth and nail, with everything that we've got, until we stop them completely. Now, some people say to me, oh, you know, you're no better than the Muslims because you want to destroy them. But, you know, what a stupid thing to say. They want to destroy us. Do you sit back and say, oh, well, you know, we'll be nice guys if you'll be nice guys? It doesn't work that way. If an enemy is out to kill you, you only have one choice. You kill or be killed. And these people are out to kill us.
Right. And the thing about that is this, is that if your cause is just, then not only do I feel that God will be on your side, but I feel if your cause is just, that you're not the same as these terrorists, because these terrorists are willing to kill the innocent. We are protecting the innocent.
That's right.
It's actually the complete opposite.
Yeah.
And I think they need to expand their horizons, broaden their knowledge base, and get with the program. Stop with the digs and the small time insults, and just, we need to start having conversation again. We need to start being able to have conversation with people who disagree, and then we need to be able to admit when we're wrong, because it's like when you write a college essay, for example, right? If you're presenting an essay and you have to present sources for all the facts you're supposed to provide in the essay, if you don't present any facts or any sources, then you're not going to get a good grade in the paper.
No.
So I find that a lot of people want to come into conversation with a lot of opinions, and they don't really want to talk about the facts. And when you do, they get offended, and they think that, you know, the political correctness of this world today it's funny that they call it correctness because it's very incorrect when you think about it.
Yeah.
But that's just ruining everybody. It's ruining society. And, you know, I think that people need to stop making the false assumption that their opinions are more important than our facts.
Yeah. Well, I've run across this. I mean, I did a mail-out campaign. I organized teams of people around Australia to go and put flyers in letterboxes. And that went on for a few months last year. It was very, very successful. And I knew it was successful because I started getting hate mail from people. And some of them gave me their phone numbers or their email addresses, and I wrote back to them or I contacted them, and I presented the facts. Well, they didn't like that. I mean, as you say, they couldn't handle the facts.
Yeah.
You can't handle the truth. But this is the problem we face. These people are living in la-la land. They don't understand that we are facing such a terrible enemy. They are thinking as human beings and empathetic human beings, and there's nothing wrong with being empathetic, but you cannot be empathetic with an animal, with a beast. It's just not
right.
Possible.
And, you know, I don't know if you've gotten this from our conversation thus far, but I myself am a Christian, and, you know, I believe in the Bible's teachings, and it says don't cast your pearls before swine. It says... It also says there's a time for war, there's a time for peace, there's a time for everything.
That's right.
And there is a time for everything. And if you miss that time, if you miss that chance to stop evil when you had it, then you're not doing your duty, not just to God, but to your fellow countrymen, your fellow people of this world, you know. You're not doing your part. You're supposed to be a watchman, and people who aren't sounding the alarm like we are and who aren't trying to be activists and do things and protest against this evil and aren't standing against it to stop it, they're giving their consent whether they know it or not.
That's,
you know,
right.
And they need to not be silent. Our voices are some of the most important, you know, channels that we have to reach people. And that's why social media is also a great channel, a great tool, because it's another way of getting our voices heard.
Mm. Steve, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. I'm just about out of time now, but I hope that you'll come back on again. I know we're now friends on Facebook on the new account, so keep an eye on things, because a lot of things are happening, and I'm putting it all up on the Facebook pages. And let's talk afterwards about coordinating your rally with the one that's going on worldwide.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Michael, for having me on the show, and I look forward to being on again in the future.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Take care now.
Yeah, you too. Bye now. This is the Restore Australia.
Down to the supermart, parked by the shade of an old gum tree, humming along as she waltzed in with her shopping bag, buying enough for her family of three. Dear old Matilda, waltzing Matilda, scouring the aisle for a family of three. Item by item, she slowly came to realize only a handful were halal free. Turning the labels, looking for that squiggly bit on cat food and tampons, and hard to see. Even some water bottles had it hidden on the back. Poor old Matilda said,
"Well, bugger me."
Dear old Matilda, waltzing Matilda, scouring the aisles for her family of three. Item by item, she slowly came to realize only a handful were halal free. Dear old Matilda went up to the manager, asking politely just what it means. Where are the products for those who don't believe in this? Madam, be quiet, you're making a scene. Dear old Matilda, waltzing Matilda, scouring the aisles for a family of three. Item by item, she slowly came to realize only a handful were halal free. The manager showed her the documented policy. We must be inclusive to Muslims, you see. Matilda replied, saying,
do I look like a Muslim, mate? Do you know how offending that is to me?
Dear old Matilda, waltzing Matilda, scouring the aisles for a family of three. Item by item, she slowly came to realize only a handful were halal free. Poor old Matilda, as true and blue as you could get, now called a bogan and a racist, it seems, for not buying products that pay a flaming Muslim tax. You reckon we should wear it? In your friggin' dreams. Dear old Matilda, waltzing Matilda, scouring the aisles for a family of three. Loudly and proudly and telling every one of us, don't buy a thing till it's halal free. Don't buy a thing till it's halal free. Don't buy a thing till it's halal free.